Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
There's a cat over here. There's a cat over there. And the wrong one died. And the wrong one died.
Welcome to The Wrong Cat Died, the podcast breakdown of the Catastrophe. I'm your host, Mike Abrams, and today we have a special guest. Before the shutdown, she was touring on the Cats National Tour as Jelly Lorum. So welcome, Anne-Marie Rosano, and thank you for joining me.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for having me.
I am very excited to talk to you. I was supposed to see the tour in Indiana in April, and we did not get to go see that. So I would have probably saw your performance. But since that didn't happen, I think we're just going to have to settle for chatting about Cats instead. So I want to start with what I always like to know first is, before you went on tour, how much history did you have with the musical? Were you in a production? Did you sing it as a kid? Did you see it as a kid? How much did you know about Cats before you decided to be on tour?
I'm so excited to answer this question for you. So I had never seen Cats. The only experience I had with Cats was like doing the choreography in classes. I grew up going to a dance school that prioritized preserving original Broadway choreography. So the original Gillian Lynn was definitely a part of my upbringing in classes. But other than that, I had never seen Cats. I had never done Cats. I sang Memory in a concert production in 2017. 2016. And
okay, so recent.
It was the kind of concert where like you get up and talk about your experience with the music before you sing. And so I told the story that I had never done Cats, I had never seen Cats, but that when I was a baby, like an actual toddler, there was the old Cats commercial where it would go Cats dramatically, and then like you'd see the tire, and then it would go Cats dramatically, and you'd see the dancers and all this stuff. And apparently, according to my parents, every time they said Cats, I would say Dogs. So it's like I knew as a baby that somehow, someday, this would happen. But no, I had never seen any production of Cats until after I learned Act One.
How old were you when you were doing the dance routines?
I never did anything like in a show or a recital per se. It's just like that was just part of class. So
yeah,
I started going to that school when I was seven, but I can't tell you the first time I would have done anything.
The reason I asked is because McCavity's dance number and a couple of the dance numbers are a little aggressive.
Well,
for a child to be doing.
We would have done anything from the opening or from the ball. And the McCavity dance sequence that you would have seen in my production is mostly Andy's stuff. So none of that existed yet when I was a child.
So my knowledge is all from 2016 revival, because I saw that one twice.
Me too. I've still never seen any original production of that.
But have you seen the 1998 movie?
No, I have not.
So it's all on YouTube.
Yes,
from the Cats like official page, like that's what is there to watch. So my knowledge is either that production or whatever memory I have of the 2016 productions I saw twice. And that's it. I have no other frame of reference for this entire musical. So it's, I'm kind of with you there, but now I kind of look back and I'm always like, wait, was it like the 2000 or 2016 or 1998? Like, did they really do a crotch thrust in a cat's face? Like, is that what you're going to learn in your school in the Rum Tum Tiddlers?
No. We would have learned, I mean, the opening and the ball are like the parts that are really iconic.
Okay. So you had never seen it, never really did anything. And then you become Joey Lorme. What was told to you? Like, how did you prepare for that, for the role? If you really had zero context.
Well, I didn't have zero context because that's not really fair to say because I've auditioned for it so many times.
Okay.
For various productions over. Yeah. And I actually had just auditioned last summer. I auditioned for the production that's out on Norwegian Cruise Line. No, not Norwegian. I'm sorry. Royal Caribbean. Cruise Line for Jelly. So I had just like prepared Gus and all that stuff. And I mean, I got cut. So so I was like ready for that because I had kind of just done it. But they give you your three words. For every character has three words that describes them. So Jellies are practical, cheerful, and busy, which is exactly me. they tell you, they like give you some sort of explanation. Like, she's the motherly cat. She's the one who takes care of everyone. And my cast was particularly young. So that was a very easy role for me to fill anyway. And then the rest of the character type stuff to me, and I'm sure we'll talk about it at some point, but the relationships between the characters, since there's no script to speak of, we, you know, most of it is made up. And what we base it off of mostly was our staging, like who are you near? Who do you dance with? Who do you, like, which kittens do I protect and how do I do that? Helped me determine like which ones were mine.
And as I've read through the like rumor mill and tried to make my own, it seems like most of that is the right way people are analyzing this. Like, they're dancing together a lot. So they are clearly together or brother and sister or whatever that is. There are such different variations of this that there's always like 10 different, that could be the father, that could be the mother because of that. So if you were in your production, walk me through what that like lineage is for you. Like, who are you protecting? Who are you dating? Who are your parents? Like, what does that look like? Cause I have some guesses.
Yeah. Well, yeah, ultimately, like, it doesn't matter for the audience what we decide, as long as we've decided something. Like, it has to be meaningful to us for it to communicate meaning to the audience. But since it's not in the script, it doesn't matter who's who. But for me, I spend a lot of time with Jenny Annie Dots, so we are clearly at least friends, but it's also pretty clearly established that she and Skimble are married. So, and I do the invitation with Skimble, and so we kind of decided that Skimble's my brother, and it's also kind of based on who looks like who, like who's markings on your unitard is similar in color. So like me and Skimble are both tabby cats. So I decided that we're brother and sister. Jenny's my sister-in-law. And I think that Tumble Brutus, Plato, and Pouncival are my actual kittens. And we've decided that Rumpelteazer was the daughter of Jenny and Skimble. So she's my niece. I protect Tumble and Pounce a lot. Tumble in my production was a little bit more of a scaredy cat and Pounceable was a little bit more of a daredevil. And so to me, Tumble was my youngest.
Okay. What about with Grizabella? What do you think the relationship is there?
For me, Grizabella was someone who, like, I looked up to her growing up. I think that we were very much of the same generation. And she's someone that I kind of like idolized, and I felt really betrayed when she left. And I also think that she abandoned her kittens, whoever they are, she abandoned them. And as the motherly cat, I think that's the worst thing you could possibly do. So that kind of fueled my anger and resentment for her.
What about with Gus?
I have a personal Gus kind of in my life. I have someone in my life that it was very easy for me to kind of put that into context. Burt Michaels is an old Broadway dancer, actor, movie musicals of old, West Side Story, Gypsy, like all of those old like 50s through 70s classic Broadway shows. And he was my mentor for a long time. And so to me, Gus is Burt. So it just helped me think of him in a really endearing way.
So it's a mentor, father yeah. figure, but maybe not a father.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. My last one, then I do want to see if we can tie a couple more together. What about Bustopher Jones?
Oh, he is the sexiest of all the sexy to me. And so Tim Gulon was my bus Gus, and he decided that Bustopher wasn't actually part of our tribe in the way that everyone else is. He thinks that he like goes around to these restaurants and goes around to other tribes or whatever, and that he's kind of more of a stray in that way. That so to me, Bustopher is someone that Jelly has a casual relationship with every time he comes to visit.
So that's interesting, because that's my biggest like tying together with your character theory is that you and Grizabella were best friends growing up, and you were with Bustopher whenever he came to town, but Grizabella cheated on like your friendship by sleeping with Bustopher.
That and was not part of my story, but that works.
And then this comes all back together, because then you're like, your way of, or no, sorry, I have in the reverse. You cheated with the Bustopher and Grizabella were together. And then your way of forgiving is to give up your opportunity to sing for your chance to be. So you instead give your time to Gus and give him the opportunity to try to be selected for the Heaviside Layer. So you're giving it up as your way of apologizing.
That works. That had never entered my mind.
That's what happens when you record 20 plus episodes about cats and you've read every fan site possible to try to figure out this plot, this loose plot. That is what you come up with.
No, to me, Jelly doesn't want to be chosen because she feels a sense of responsibility to the kittens in the tribe. It's like, I feel like I'm too important and I have to take care of things and I'm just like not done. But I very much think that Gus should be chosen. And so, and Jelly hates attention. So the fact that she even sings this, it's the way that they set it up in the beginning. And I don't know if anyone's gone over this on the show yet. But I was told that I'm sitting Gus down because I want him to tell his story. And then he decides he doesn't want to, he doesn't want to talk. And so he looks at me the moment before I sing, he looks at me and says like, please, like you do it for me. I can't speak.
Wow. No, I've not thought about that. It makes sense. Yeah. And it kind of lines up also with why he's not selected, because he doesn't give his own performance.
But he does eventually.
Yeah. I don't know. That's interesting. I think it's interesting too that you say, because Eloise Krop, who played Jenny Indydot, said the same thing, that she didn't think she could go because she was a motherly figure. So I would challenge that a little bit now, because I've thought about that since Eloise said it. Do you think that there's some merit to you being able to be reborn and come back and be able to help those kittens even further in this next life?
Well, no, because then I'd be a kitten and they'd be older than me. I mean, I could help kittens.
But you would have so much wisdom having been reborn.
I don't know, because I don't know if you keep, I don't know how much of your memories you keep. And I think that's part of it. Like Tim thought that as Gus, he didn't want to be chosen because he didn't want to lose his memories.
Yeah. And that was, Christopher Gurr said the same thing, who played Gus as well, that they just didn't think they could be selected. That there wasn't another life. They didn't want to go. Mm-hmm. I think they're just justifying because the end is already written for them and they can't change it.
Yeah. But I mean,
I definitely think that there's a very big Team Gus out there for a reason. Okay. Let's go on to more about just in general, what was the tour like? Like, what was it like going to every city? Kind of bringing this, like, it's such a unique show. And I feel like a lot of times you're going to be in a production. People are not going to know what they're walking into, like I did. And you're getting to do this across the country. So what was that experience like? Could you kind of see it on people's faces of they're like, oh, I know this is Cats, or was like, what in the world am I watching?
We had a lot of fans. Like, especially the people that we can see, you know, like, I'll only be able to actually see the people who are sitting in front or the people who come to the stage door. So for the most part, those are Cats fans. Those really aren't people who have never seen the show before. So that was cool to see, to be a part of something that's such a phenomenon that the name precedes you. You know, like, we come out of the stage door, they don't know who we are because we look so different. And so you're like, do they want me to sign their playbill? Do they not want me to sign their playbill? And it's so bizarre because you have to be like, because I want to be open to it if they want it, but I don't want to be like presumptuous. Like, who am I? You know? And so sometimes they'd ask or they'd look at you, like they try to like look at you and to see like who you are. And then I'd have to like tell them, like, I play Jelly, I sing the song about Gus. And then they'd be like, oh, you know, and then you know that like they're not your fan. They're a fan of what you do because the show is so iconic. And it's like they either love that part or they don't care.
Yeah, that's totally fair. A lot of people come dressed up at the stage door?
Some people come dressed up. Yeah. Yeah. We definitely had some people, especially in the cities where we had a longer sit down, and they'd come back.
Come from multiple viewings.
Yeah, yeah.
Makes sense.
I debuted in Toronto and we were there for 6 weeks. So that was an interesting experience for me because I was in rehearsal and we went to a few different cities. But to be in Toronto for that long right at the beginning of my contract it felt more like being on Broadway than being on tour, kind of. Especially because we were at the Princess of Wales and that's the biggest, fanciest theater in Canada. So it was exciting to be there and to start there, but there were definitely people who came back over and over and over again.
So I'm going to ask you a question that might get you in a little bit of trouble.
Uh-oh.
But what was your favorite tour stop city? And then instead of saying least favorite, I'm going to say what was the most surprising city that like pleasantly surprised you? Because I think saying least favorite can be, that's too subjective.
Yeah. My favorite, it was really special for me to debut in Toronto because I did Disney Cruise Line at the very, very beginning of my career. So we rehearsed in Toronto and I saw a show at the Princess of Wales. So it very much felt like coming full circle to me. And I also loved being in Pittsburgh because I know a bunch of people there. I did some theater in Pittsburgh and I have some theater friends there and it was great for them to be able to come to the show and to be at the Benedum Center, which is like this big, exciting place. So I would say those were kind of my favorite cities. Surprising. I mean, I want to say that, where were we? Chattanooga kind of surprised me in a positive way. It was really cute. Like where we were, where the city was really cute downtown. Richmond was also really cute in a way I didn't expect. I didn't know, you know, because I'd never been there. But we had a triple split week where we went to someplace in Georgia, someplace in the Florida Panhandle, and someplace in Mississippi all in 1 week. And the stages were a little, like the stage in Florida was a little bit too small, like the edges of our deck didn't fit. And the city in Mississippi, they had just had a flood and the water wasn't safe to drink. So let's put that out there that Flint is not the only place with the water crisis in this country.
And so that was all in like 1 week. So a bunch of travel, trying to figure out a new stage, everything. Wow. That's
tight backstage places. Yeah. That week was hard.
Okay. Now, when you were on tour, the movie was coming out, the new movie. So there was clearly some buzz too, just around both in general. I'm sure like it definitely highlighted your tour as well. Did you see the movie like as a group, as a cast? Like, what was your experience with the new movie?
Yes. Those of us who were around, we went together on Christmas Day. And so that was fun to like go as a group. I wouldn't have wanted to just go on my own, you know? So we went as a cast, we went on Christmas Day, and it was fun. It was fun to see it together.
Any other hot takes on the movie? It sounds like you want to say something.
I'm waiting for more specific questions. But yeah, I mean, they did their own thing. And to me, Cats is a dance show. So it was unfortunate to me the way that it was edited, because you didn't get to see the dancing that was there. You know, it was clear that like Andy had given his contributions to the film, and that there were excellent dancers in that show, in that movie, and we just couldn't really see it. And then it, just in terms of camera angles, and then they also did something weird to their feet. So we couldn't really see the full beauty of the ballet, which was unfortunate, but it was fun and it was different. And I liked Skimble's number, because that they added tap dancing to that, because I would have missed the tap if it was gone, because they didn't do it for Jenny's number, clearly, because Rebel Wilson's not a tap dancer. But I liked it in Skimble. I thought it really fit the train.
Yeah, I mean, the dance editing was an interesting, it was hard to watch at times. And that was, I think, the most consistent criticism I've seen, beyond like the other some weirdness in some parts. But that, I think, like, you can kind of get over, because Cats in general has some just weirdness all around. The other part that I think someone said that it was cheating that they had added dialogue, is that they kind of wrote a story to it and had Victoria be the, being kind of like the narrator of sorts, and then also making McCavity way more of an antagonist to have like a villain. And it just missed some of that miss for me, because I wasn't really sure where they were going. Whereas like, I love McCavity's song, and that whole part was supposed to be the like Taylor Swift coming in and all this. And I was just waiting to, it just didn't hit as much, even though I like, again, love the performance, love the song. So those were, and then there were some other stuff, like what they did with Mr. Mistopheles still bothers me.
I don't mind the exposition that much, because I think that they were trying to explain something that doesn't make sense to a wider audience. Especially they were probably doing that a lot for the people who are not fans of the musical, who don't know the musical, and they needed to give them like something to hold on to, especially in the beginning, where he's like, now we're going to go through the cats and they're all going to tell their story, so that you at least like have some idea, like, okay, everyone's going to talk about themselves. Cool.
Yeah, they went for mass production, like for this to be $100 million movie, when I really think its lane was probably just make the best version of Cats for the super fans, and just at a smaller production level and own it.
It would have been totally
different.
Didn't
do. It would have had a different cast. It would have had, you know, a very different production. But I feel like that would have been the better choice. A better jokeful choice. Okay, let's do some rapid fire. If you did not play Joey Lorme, who would you want to play? What other cat would you want to play?
I think it would be really fun to play Bomb Ballerina, because she's so sexy and fun, and like, that's so not me. So it would just be cool to like step out of the box in that way.
And what other song, besides, I know you sing Gus's, but like, what song would you love to sing if you, you know, got another chance to sing one?
I really like Jenny's piece in the beginning. It's just like, so like tap dance and showgirl in Broadway. And I know that like, you're not a huge fan of it because of the cockroaches, but that doesn't bother me. And I think it's fun. Like, she rides the broom and she jumps over the thing and she has sparkles and it's just so showy.
I enjoy that song. I just, the whole cockroach rat tap dance, like, it's just like, it's such a bizarre thing. And when you like really try to break down what's happening in this show, that one's really hard to explain. Like, that one's just kind of all over the board in terms of like, it is very Broadway. It's very early in the show. But then I'm like, wait, she's teaching cockroaches how to like knit.
Yeah.
And like, because, that's what the,
like, think of it.
That's what the lyrics are about.
She's a house cat. Then she, which is confusing because she doesn't wear a collar, but if she's a house cat and she sleeps all day and she's up at night, like, think about what happens at night. Like, the mice come out, the cockroaches come out, and think about like your own house cat. Your house cat hunts mice and cockroaches, right? And like keeps them at bay. So you don't have those things if you have a cat, because she's teaching them. She's like, oh, I don't have to kill them. I can just like, they just need jobs. So I'm going to give them jobs and then they're going to behave themselves.
But does a 6-foot tap dancing cockroach not give you nightmares? Like, I understand the concept. I understand like the vision of it. But at the same time, I'm watching this going like, there's 15 cockroaches tap dancing. Like, especially as someone who's living in New York.
Very scary.
That's like my nightmare.
It is, absolutely. It is
legitimately my nightmare.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Okay. Favorite cat and least favorite cat, not actor, character.
Okay. Am I answering as Jelly or as me? Like
as you.
Okay. So like as a fan.
As a fan. Although I would be curious to hear if that changes, like what your Jelly answer is too.
Absolutely. It would change. Yeah. let me think.
We can do both.
As a fan, my favorite cat would be, I really like Plato McCafferty as a fan. Like, I think that track is really cool. I think he gets to do like very like manly athletic dancing, and the McCafferty fight from our production is just like really edgy and gritty, and I enjoy that.
It is my favorite song still now.
Oh, the song. I think me too. I enjoy that song a lot. My least favorite cat as a fan, I'm afraid to answer. But I think it's like Pouncible or Syllabub. I hate saying that, but it is. Like, Pouncible doesn't have that much of a feature. He works really hard. Like, that dancer works hard in the show, but he doesn't have a big feature. So I guess I just kind of don't care.
So that's how I feel about, that's why my answer is Peter.
Oh, I don't like count that as a, I don't count him as a character, because to me,
no one should.
Yeah.
But he's in.
He is. But to me, that's not, he doesn't exist.
Yeah. I mean, he virtually doesn't. It is the bus gus track.
Yeah. And since it's that person's face that I'm looking at, I just can't.
You can't dislike him. Okay. What is Jelly's answer to this question? I'm more curious on the least favorite, because I think the favorite it's hard to answer with three kittens and Gus and like.
Yeah, she loves so many of them, so she wouldn't choose a favorite. But she's not a fan of Rum Tum Tugger.
Oh, okay. No Tugger.
Yeah. She just thinks that he's self-obsessed and like, you're like, dude, stop talking. Like, you're not making a case for yourself. You're just interrupting us because you want attention. And like, could you sit down and like, let us get on with it?
Sounds a little jealous. sounds like you, like every other kitten, although Joey's not a kitten, I guess, but every other female cat, I assume, and male cat, I assume all like Tugger.
Well, she just knows, like, she knows he's a bad boy. So she like is looking out for everyone else getting hurt. Like, really, there's that moment when like Cassandra goes up to Tugger to like try to seduce him and Bomb just throws her out of the way. And Cassandra looks at me like, look what she did. And I look at her like, what were you expecting going after a guy like that?
See, this is the part, like, this is why the story needs actual context. Because, like, that's stuff that I, like, when I walked out the very first time I saw it, I picked up none of this.
Oh, no.
I picked up zero of this. All I walked out was just totally shell-shocked. And I was singing Mungo Jerry and Rebel Teaser.
Yeah.
And that was it. And, like, I still didn't know what happened at the end. I was still trying to, like, process it. And I missed all of the nuances of everything because I started the show being scared out of my mind, thankfully not on the aisle, as the lights go off. And then all of a sudden there's a cat in your face with like green eyes flashing. Like that is a matinee show, just like a very haunting way to start, when you're not expecting it. And then ended with, you know, the one song I knew going in, and then this like weird yelling at me about a cat's not a dog type of thing. And I was like, again, shell shocked. I walked out. I didn't know. I had no idea what happened. I was just trying to like ask anybody who'd seen it, being like, what did I just see? Please someone tell me what, explain this to me. Cause I still couldn't. And I saw it again a year later. And the only thing I knew a little bit more was like, oh, I know a couple of these songs now. I like this one better. It wasn't until I started reading the like fan wiki page and all kinds of information, I'm like, oh, there's some depth to this. Like there's a lot more to this than I would have ever thought when you just watch it.
There only is that kind of depth because like we need it to be there. You know, like we can't just get up and do this musical with no context. Otherwise it's not a musical. You know, like I didn't notice those things until weeks into, like I spent 2 weeks learning the show and then like 2 weeks watching and tracking. And I was looking like after the first week of watching and tracking to be like, okay, now I know like where I stand and where I go and like all that stuff. It wasn't until like week four that I was finally able to be like, oh, what is she doing here? Why is she in that position? Why is she interacting with this cat? What's she doing? Who's she looking at? Because I was a replacement. So
that's what I find so interesting, because I personally, I like love sitcoms. I like things that have very clear, simplified like storylines. Like I kind of know what's coming, or like basically every TV show made on USA is cut the same way. Like Psych, White Collar, like all of those, Suits, every single one of them are cut identically. There's a miniature story arc through the whole season, and then the rest is just like event, commercial break, event, commercial break, event, commercial break, the resolution to that conflict for the episode, and it's over, which is what I'm like used to from any type of TV, movie stuff I go to see. And so I always, even in musicals, I kind of like, I'm looking for the like, okay, great, we're going to hit intermission with this big like apex, and then we're going to get to the conclusion, we're going to have like some nice buttoned up ending. And Cats is the one that broke that. And I've always wondered I get like, it's not meant for that. So it's like, again, it's not written for me. It's not written for my type of like, oh, I want this like nicely crafted story. But what I've always wondered is how much of this stuff that you're saying, like we had to come up with, was thought through, or was just like a necessity that the actors early on or in different productions have had to come up with, versus like Andrew Lloyd Webber and like whoever, like everyone else involved in that initial couple productions is like, they're together. That's this, like, cause there isn't a story, like there is no writing to it. So I've always wondered like how much of that came from the need from the actors versus this was intentionally kind of set out that way.
That's a great question. The only relationship that I was told is like, this is what it is basically Demeter McCavity. That he like basically abducted her years ago or however long ago, and that they had an abusive relationship. Or like she was basically kidnapped and like held against her will. And that Grisabella left the tribe to be with McCavity in a consensual way. And so to us, that's why we're mad at her. That's where that comes from, is that like she's with this horrible, evil villain type person cat, who has hurt someone in our tribe. So that's the only part that was like told to me, like, these are these people's relationship, this is who they are. And really, really everything else is, some of the things are like, are canon in the sense that everyone kind of agrees on certain things, that like Old Deuteronomy is like mostly everyone's dad, you know, like those kinds of things everyone really basically agrees on, like Monk and Tugger are brothers. Almost no one is going to say that they disagree with that. But, you know, Skimble and Jelly being brother and sister, like, I don't know how many other Skimbles and Jellies decided that. I don't know. To me, that was clear because of where we were standing, really.
That's just, again, kind of so fascinating to me, because the show that has such a, like, a lore to it, and it's been around for so long, has such little context mm-hmm. that's given to each different production, each different thing. And there's characters that are in certain parts that aren't in certain parts. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, there's just not that in so many other things. It's like, you go see most other Broadway musicals, it's like, you're going to get the, even a revival, like, I guess I shouldn't say that because the Oklahoma revival and a couple of these other ones were fairly different. But usually it's like, look, that's the story. We know what the story is. They might do some different things with dance numbers or staging. And with Cats, I don't feel like, as I've like even read, there's a production in like somewhere in Southeast Asia that has an entire different character do a dance number that just does not exist in the US. And it's like, I don't know what other shows do that.
Nope.
All right, I have two more rapid fire questions for you that are very different for the time. So one is which cat would you want to be quarantined with?
I like had a thought of who I'd want to be quarantined with. I'm with you, Mephistopheles, hands down.
I think that's the only
hands
answer.
Hands down, because of the magic thing, but also because in my production, if I'm thinking from Jelly's perspective, my interactions with Mephistopheles are always like he's trying to impress me in some way. Like he's trying to look, I'm a grown up cat. I'm good. I'm magical. I'm, you know, so like if I had someone who just wants to like take care of me and like impress me, like you can come over.
I've made arguments for a couple other people. But that to me still seems like the no-brainer answer. And then the last one is, and I might have to explain it, but there's a thing called Cat's Tumblr, which basically there are fans that take on the personas of the cats and write back and forth with other fans taking on other personas of cats. So it's like not fan fiction in the sense that they're writing a story, but they're interacting together. And it's like, I play this cat in this situation. And it's not like scenes from the show, it's just like real life. So if you were going to take over a cat Tumblr and just write as that character in real life scenarios, which cat would you want to write for?
I mean, I know the most about Jelly.
Let's take Jelly.
I could think like her. Okay. I don't know what this is, so I haven't looked into it. So I could be like totally answering.
I'm afraid
wrong.
To really look too deep into it, but I've been told about it. I think it's fascinating. I think it's like a really cool fan thing that like this group of people does this to like kind of preserve the stories of these cats just in different scenarios outside of the like Jellicle world set of some sort.
I think I'd say Rumpelteazer, because she can just like say and do anything. You know, you just can't go wrong.
Yep. I think that's a good choice. That's kind of why my answer has been McCavity for a while. I think like you can just write the villain, which would be really kind of a fun scenario of like, you just don't care. And so you would just write whatever you want, I think would be kind of fun, like a different persona to take on. Cause it's stuff I wouldn't be able to like, or wouldn't do or be able to do in real life.
Well, that's acting.
That's very, very true. Okay. My last question, which is the most important question, is do you agree or disagree with me that Grizabella was the wrong choice to die at the end of the musical?
I mean, you know, I'm Team Gus, like as a person, as Jelly, just because like that feels like the right thing to do. He's old. He might not make it to the next Jellicle Ball. He's earned his, you know, he's done all of these wonderful things. He deserves it. But without killing Grizabella, there's no story. You know, like
if you
kill Gus, it's like this nice little nursery rhyme where this old cat who did all these wonderful things gets to be reborn, you know, and it's like then if you wanted to make it actually kid friendly, that would be who would die.
I do think it depends on how you interpret the musical. Cause again, like I've said many, many times that I view this as a competition, a singing competition. Yes. And in that case, the way like each person goes up each week on stage and they tell their backstories and like America's Got Talent and all those exercises, like this, the sob stories usually do better, or they get more votes. So when in that scenario, I think like you could argue Gus, you could argue Grizabella, and if they keep kind of going back and forth, see, my interpretation is maybe we just change the show and it's like we start with a couple of them and then we just like Grizabella and Gus like each sing back and forth, like semifinals, finals type of thing. So I think you could still have a story just with depending on how you interpret the story.
Totally. But Kat, about forgiveness and redemption means we have to choose Grizabella because she's the one who needs that.
I guess, I mean, yeah, I get the argument.
No, I know.
Like, I'm not gonna, like, I've made it. I'm understanding. I don't know. It just doesn't do it for me. I think there are other ways to take this chaos.
Because who else would it be besides the two of them? You know, like.
So my biggest argument was, and I know that there's lots of holes into this argument, but from a fan voting production value standpoint, I would do the X Factor version and I would combine two acts and I would send Rumtug Tugger and Mr. Mustafli together because they're clearly either in some form of relationship or some bromance or some version of that is together. And you see the Fifth Harmonies and the One Directions of the world where they take individual acts and put them and they become superstars. That to me is my, like, those are the two that I'm like, these are the most entertaining characters in this entire production. And if I'm voting purely off of that factor alone, if I combine them, can you imagine a number with the two of them together with like the rock star and the magic, like that would just be phenomenal. So I think like that is what I'm thinking is you combine those two. We vote, America votes, the world votes, they go on, they're your winners and they get reborn.
I mean, I have two things to say to that. I've heard you say that before. And for we were told that those two numbers are not actually them trying to be picked. We were told that there are two different kinds of numbers. There are numbers like Jenny, Skimble, Gus, that they are asking to be picked. And then there are numbers like Tugger. Tugger's just interrupting the story because he wants attention. Mungo and Rump are their number is not, they're not trying to be picked. We're all gone drinking water. You know, they're there because they, you know, they stole from the houses, you know? And so, and Mistopheles' number is about bringing Old Deuteronomy back. So they're not even asking to be picked as far as we're concerned, at least in my company. That's how we saw it. But it totally makes sense from the X Factor perspective. Like, yes, definitely the most entertaining, definitely the most exciting. And I know, and then the second thing I wanted to say was Judi Dench in the movie has that like ridiculous leg extension.
Yeah.
Right? Yes. Like everybody laughs about that. And our Tugger in the Mistopheles number, there's these moments where it's like it flashes bright light and then it gets dark, and then it flashes bright light and then it gets dark, and you see the company in different positions and like jumping in midair at each of those flashes. And our tugger was on the tire and would do different poses for that flash, and he absolutely did the leg extension.
In different moments after
having seen the movie, he would do the Judy leg extension.
That's amazing. I wonder how many people picked up on that, because that's like very, very, very quietly funny and amazing.
I appreciated it.
I have never heard the argument that they aren't even trying. I mean, I can see that they're the argument that they're the kittens and they're not necessarily like it's not their time, but there are plenty of young performances that have done well in America's Got Talent. Like a teenager won one time. So it's like, I looked at this from one single lens, which I know is narrow. And so like, I agree that there are plenty of ways to argue against my way, but that was how I interpreted it.
I like Eloise's idea that it's a chorus line. I had never thought about it that way before, but I really like that. And then then Grizz is Cassie, I guess.
Yeah. So that was, again, there's, and then somebody else has recently said that they thought it was hair.
I didn't listen to that one. I'm sorry. How is it hair?
So I don't know anything about hair or chorus line. Again, I don't know that much about Broadway, but they said that it's very similar in the sense that they go to each person trying to tell why they're there.
They do.
So that is, again, now I'm starting to wonder how many musicals are basically just Cats without cats and which came first. And
wait, there was another one that someone compared it to, another musical. And I think like a light bulb went over my head, but I don't remember what it was now.
I don't know enough about most musicals to be able to piece all of this together.
Oh, it was Les Mis with Rump and Mungo being the Thénardiers. They totally are.
That one, at least I can get, cause it's, you know, Andrew Lloyd Webber.
No,
there might be some.
It's not.
Is that not him? Oh no, I'm thinking of Phantom.
Yeah.
See, I know nothing. Like, I literally know nothing about this. Besides the plot, like I've analyzed the plot so deeply now,
probably more than anyone else ever has.
There are some super fans. I'm starting to meet some super fans who really know their stuff. And like the first question I like to ask them is like, "What did I get wrong? Like what?" What did I like? What's my analysis? And it's hard because there's really no way to say this is right or wrong, because there's no, like, there is no right answer. And there's nobody until I can get like Trevor Nunn or somebody to come talk to me and answer all of my questions. I don't think we're going to have answers, but that's the beauty of it. So how can we find you on social media?
Instagram is my platform of choice. It's just my name, at Anne Marie Rosano. That's Anne Marie with an E, A-N-N-E.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. Any parting words? Any parting Cats words?
No, it's just like my contract was cut short, and I really mourn the loss of all of the performances I didn't get. But Cats will live on and on now and forever. So
hopefully you get
Cats will be back somewhere someday.
Hopefully you get another opportunity. I hope so. to live your joke. Well, thank you again to Anne Marie Rosano for being a wonderful guest on The Wrong Cat Died, the podcast breakdown of the Cat's Catastrophe. To follow along, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or anywhere else you listen to your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Wrong Cat Died, or check out our website, thewrongcatdied.com.
Thank you. This was so fun.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. and there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.